Lois stumbled against him, and Ralph had all he could do to keep them both from sprawling to the pavement. Then she lifted her head slowly, as if her hair had been dipped in cement, curled a hand around her mouth, and inhaled sharply. At the same time, she flickered a little. Under other circumstances, Ralph might have dismissed that flicker as a momentary glitch in his own eyes, but not now. She had slid up just a little, just enough to feed. He hadn't seen Lois dip into the waitress's aura, but this time everything happened in front of him. The auras of the news people were like small but brightly colored Japanese lanterns, glowing bravely in a vast, gloomy cavern. Now a tight beam of violet gray speared out from one of them, from Michael Rosenberg, Connie Chung's bearded cameraman, in fact. It divided in two, an inch or so in front of Lois's face. The upper branch divided in two again and slipped into her nostrils. The lower branch went between her parted lips and into her mouth. He could see it glowing faintly behind her cheeks, lighting her from the inside as a candle lights a jack-o'-lantern. Her grip on him loosened, and suddenly the leaning pressure of her weight was gone. A moment later, the violet beam of light disappeared. She looked around at him. Color, not a lot, but some, was returning to her leaden cheeks. That's better. A lot better. Now you, Ralph. He was reluctant. It still felt like stealing, but it had to be done if he didn't want to simply collapse right here. He could almost feel the last of Nirvana Boy's borrowed energy running out through his pores. He curled his hand around his mouth now, as he had in the Dunkin' Donuts parking lot that morning, and turned slightly to his left, seeking a target. Connie Chung had backed several steps closer to them. She was still looking up at the bedsheet banner hanging from the canopy, and talking to Rosenberg, who seemed none the worse for wear as a result of Lois's borrowing, about it. With no further thought, Ralph inhaled sharply through the curled tube of his fingers. Chung's aura was the same lovely shade of wedding gown ivory as those which had surrounded Helen and Nat on the day they'd come to his apartment with Gretchen Tilbury. Instead of a ray of light, something like a long straight ribbon shot from Chung's aura. Ralph felt strength begin to fill him almost at once, banishing the aching weariness in his joints and muscles. And he could think clearly again, as if a big cloud of sludge had just been washed out of his brain. Connie Chung broke off, looked up at the sky for a moment, then began to talk to the cameraman again. Ralph glanced around and saw Lois looking at him anxiously. "Any better?" she whispered. "All kinds," he said. "But it's still like being zipped up in a body bag." "I think," Lois began, and then her eyes fixed on something to the left of the Civic Center doors. She screamed and shrank back against Ralph, her eyes so wide it seemed they must tumble from their sockets. He followed her gaze and felt his breath stop in his throat. The planners had tried to soften the building's plain brick sides by planting evergreen bushes along them. These had either been neglected or purposely allowed to grow until they interlaced and threatened to entirely hide the narrow strip of grass between them and the concrete walk which bordered the drive-through. Giant bugs that looked like prehistoric trilobites were squirming in and out of these evergreens in droves, crawling over each other, bumping heads, sometimes rearing up and pawing each other with their front legs like stags locking horns during mating season. They weren't transparent, like the bird on the satellite dish, but there was something ghostly and unreal about them just the same. Their auras flickered feverishly, and brainlessly, Ralph guessed, through a whole spectrum of colors. They were so bright and yet so ephemeral that it was almost possible to think of them as weird lightning bugs. Except that's not what they are. You know what they are. "Hey!" It was Rosenberg, Chung's cameraman, who hailed them, but most of the others in front of the building were looking. "She okay, bud?" "Yes," Ralph called back. He still had his hand curled around his mouth and lowered it quickly, feeling foolish. "She just... I saw a mouse," Lois called, smiling a daffy, dazed smile, an our Lois smile if Ralph had ever seen one. He was very proud of her. She pointed toward the evergreen shrubs to the left of the door with a finger that was almost steady. He went right in there. Gosh, but he was a fat one. Did you see him, Norton?
No, Alice. Stick around, lady, Michael Rosenberg called. You'll see all kinds of wildlife here tonight.
There was some desultory, almost forced laughter, and then they turned back to their tasks.
God, Ralph, Lois whispered. Those things.
He took a hand and squeezed it.
Steady, Lois.
They know, don't they? That's why they're here. They're like vultures.
Ralph nodded. As he watched, several bugs emerged from the tops of the bushes and began to ooze aimlessly up the wall. They moved with dazed sluggishness, like flies buzzing against a window pane in November, and left slimy trails of color behind them. These quickly dimmed and faded. Other bugs crawled out from beneath the bushes and onto the small strip of lawn.
One of the local news commentators began strolling toward this infested area, and when he turned his head, Ralph saw it was John Kirkland.
He was talking to a good-looking woman dressed in one of those power-look business outfits, which Ralph found, under normal circumstances anyway, extremely sexy. He guessed she was Kirkland's producer, and wondered if Lisette Benson's aura turned green when this woman was around.
They're going toward those bugs, Lois whispered fiercely at him. We have to stop them, Ralph. We have to.
We're not going to do a damn thing.
But,
Lois, we can't start raving about bugs nobody but us can see. We'll end up in the nuthatch if we do.
Besides, the bugs aren't there for them.
He paused and added, I hope. They watched as Kirkland and his good-looking colleague walked onto the lawn and into a jelly-like knot of the twitching, crawling trilobites. One slid onto Kirkland's highly polished loafer, paused until he stopped moving for a second, then climbed onto his pants leg.
I don't give much of a shit about Susan Day one way or the other, Kirkland was saying. Woman cares the story here, not her. Crying babes wearing black armbands.
Watch out, John, the woman said dryly.
Your sensitivity is showing.
Is it?
God damn.
The bug on his pants leg appeared bound for his crotch. It occurred to Ralph that if Kirkland was suddenly given the power to see what was shortly going to be crawling over his balls, he would probably go right out of his mind.
Okay, but be sure to talk to the women who run the local power network, the producer was saying. Now that Tilbury's dead, the ones that matter are Maggie Petrowski, Barbara Richards, and Dr. Roberta Harper. Harper's going to introduce the big kahuna tonight, I think. Or maybe in this case it's the big kahunette.
The woman took a step off the sidewalk, and one of her high heels skewered a lumbering color bug. A rainbow of guts spewed out of it, and a waxy white substance that looked like stale mashed potatoes. Ralph had an idea the white stuff had been eggs. Lois pressed her face against his arm.
And keep your eyes open for a lady named Helen Deepnow, the producer said, taking a step closer to the building. The bug stuck on the heel of her shoe flopped and twisted as she walked.
Deepnow, Kirkland said. He tapped his knuckles against his brow.
Somewhere deep inside, a bell is ringing. Nah, it's just your last active brain cell rolling around in there, the producer said. She's Ed Deepnow's wife. They're separated. If you want tears, she's your best bet. She and Tilbury were good friends, maybe special friends, if you know what I mean.
Kirkland leered, an expression so foreign to his on-camera persona that Ralph felt slightly disoriented. One of the color bugs, meanwhile, had found its way onto the toe of the woman's shoe and was working its way up her leg. Ralph watched in helpless fascination as it disappeared beneath the hem of her skirt. Watching the moving bump climb her thigh was like watching a kitten under a bath towel. And again it seemed that Kirkland's colleague felt something. As she talked to him about interviews during Day's speech, she reached down and absently scratched at the lump, which had now made it almost all the way up to her right hip. Ralph didn't hear the thick popping sound the fragile, flabby thing made when it burst, but he could imagine it. Was helpless not to, it seemed. and he could imagine its innards dripping down her nyloned leg like pus. It would remain there at least until her evening shower, unseen, unfelt, unsuspected. Now the two of them began discussing how they should cover the scheduled pro-life rally this afternoon, assuming it actually happened, that was. The woman was of the opinion that not even the Friends of Life would be dumbheaded enough to show up at the Civic Center after what had happened at High Ridge. Kirkland told her it was impossible to underestimate the idiocy of fanatics. People who could wear that much polyester in public were clearly a force to be reckoned with. And all the time they were talking, exchanging quips and ideas and gossip, more of the swollen, multicolored bugs were swarming busily up their legs and torsos. One pioneer had made it all the way up to Kirkland's red tie and was apparently bound for his face. Movement off to the right caught Ralph's eye. He turned toward the doors in time to see one of the techs elbowing a buddy and pointing at him and Lois. Ralph suddenly had an all-too-clear picture of what they were seeing. Two people with no visible reason for being here. Neither of them was wearing a black armband, and they were clearly not representatives of the media, just hanging out at the edge of the parking lot. The lady, who had already screamed once, had her face buried against the gentleman's arm, and the gentleman in question was gaping like a fool at nothing in particular. Ralph spoke softly and from the corner of his mouth, like an inmate discussing escape in an old Warner Brothers jailbreak epic. "Get your head up. We're attracting more attention than we can afford." For a moment, he really didn't believe she was going to be able to do that. And then she came through and lifted her head. She glanced at the shrubs growing along the wall one final time, an involuntary, horrified little peek, and then looked resolutely back at Ralph, and only Ralph. "Do you see any sign of Atropos, Ralph? That is why we're here, isn't it? To pick up his trail?" "Maybe, I suppose. Haven't even looked, to tell the truth. Too many other things going on." "I think we ought to get a little closer to the building." This wasn't a thing he wanted to do, but it seemed very important to do something. He could feel the death bag all around them, a gloomy, suffocating presence that was passively opposed to forward motion of any kind. That was what they had to fight. "All right," she said. "I'm going to ask for Connie Chung's autograph, and I'm going to be all giggly and silly while I do it. Can you stand that?" "Yes." "Good, because that will mean that if they're looking at anybody, they'll be looking at me."
"Sounds good."
He spared one last look at John Kirkland and the woman producer. They were now discussing what events might cause them to break into the evening's network feed and go live, totally unaware of the lumbering trilobites crawling back and forth on their faces. One of them was currently squirming slowly into John Kirkland's mouth. Ralph looked away in a hurry and let Lois pull him over to where Miss Chung stood with Rosenberg, the bearded cameraman. He saw the two of them glance first at Lois and then at each other. The shared look was one part amusement and three parts resignation. Here comes one of them. And then Lois gave his hand a hard little squeeze that said, "Never mind me, Ralph. You take care of your business, and I'll take care of mine."
"Pardon me, but aren't you Connie Chung?"
Lois asked in her gushiest, "Isn't this the living end?" voice.
"I saw you over there, and at first I said to Norton, 'Is that the lady who's on with Dan Rather? Or am I crazy?' And then..."
"I am Connie Chung, and it's very nice to meet you. But I'm getting ready for tonight's news, so if you could excuse me..."
"Oh, of course. I wouldn't dream of bothering you. I only want an autograph. Just a quick little scribble would do, because I'm your number one fan, at least in Maine."
Miss Chung glanced at Rosenberg. He was already holding a pen out in one hand, much as a good O.R. nurse has the instrument the doctor will want next, even before he calls for it. Ralph turned his attention to the area in front of the Civic Center and slid his perceptions up the tiniest bit. What he saw in front of the doors was a semi-transparent, blackish substance that puzzled him at first. It was about 2 inches deep and looked almost like some sort of geological formation. That couldn't be, though, could it?
If what he was looking at was real, the way objects in the short-time world were real, at least, the stuff would have blocked the doors from opening, and it wasn't doing that. As Ralph watched, two TV techs strolled ankle-deep through the stuff, as if it were no more substantial than low-lying ground mist. Ralph remembered the oral footprints people left behind, the ones that looked like Arthur Murray learned-to-dance diagrams, and suddenly thought he understood. The tracks faded away like cigarette smoke. Except that cigarette smoke really didn't go away. It left a residue on walls, on windows, and in lungs. Apparently, human auras left their own residue. It probably wasn't enough to see once the colors faded, if it was only one person. But this was the biggest public meeting place in Maine's fourth largest city. Ralph thought of all the people who had poured in and out through these doors. All the banquets, conventions, coin shows, concerts, basketball tourneys, and understood that semi-transparent slag. It was the equivalent of the slight dip you sometimes saw in the middle of much-used steps. Never mind that now, sweetheart. Take care of your business. Nearby, Connie Chung was scribbling her name on the back of Lois's light bill for September. Ralph looked at that slaggy residue on the cement apron in front of the doors, hunting for a trace of atropos, something which might register more as smell than sight, a nasty, meaty aroma like the alley which used to run behind Mr. Houston's butcher shop when Ralph was a kid. "Thank you," Lois was burbling. "I said to Norton, she looks just like she does on TV, just like a little China doll. Those were my exact words." "Very welcome, I'm sure," Chung said. "But I really have to get back to work." "Of course you do. Say hello to Dan Rather for me, won't you? Tell him I said courage."
"I certainly will," Chung smiled and nodded as she handed the pen back to Rosenberg. "Now, if you'll excuse us."
If it's here, it's higher up than I am, Ralph thought. I'll have to slide up a little bit farther.
Yes, but he'd have to be careful, and not just because time had become an extremely valuable commodity. The simple fact was that if he went up too high, he would disappear from the short-time world, and that was the sort of occurrence which might even distract these news people from the impending pro-choice rally, at least for a while. Ralph concentrated. But when the painless spasm inside his head happened this time, it didn't come as a blink, but as the soft lowering of a lash. Color bloomed silently into the world. Everything stood forth with exclamatory brilliance. Yet the strongest of these colors, the oppressive key chord, was the black of the death bag, and it was a negation of all the others. Depression and that sense of debilitating weakness fell on him again, sinking into his heart like the pointed ends of a claw hammer. He realized that if he had business to do up here, he'd better do it quickly and scoot back down to the short-time level before he was stripped clean of life force. He looked at the doors again. For a moment, there was still nothing but the fading auras of short-timers like himself. And then, what he was looking for suddenly came clear, rising into his view as a message which has been written in lemon juice rises into sight when it is held close to a candle flame. He had expected something which would look and smell like the rotting guts in the bins behind Mr. Houston's knacker shop. But the reality was even worse, possibly because it was so unexpected. There were fans of a bloody mucousy substance on the doors themselves, marks made by Atropos's restless fingers, perhaps, and a revoltingly large puddle of the same stuff sinking into the hardened residue in front of the doors. There was something so terrible about this stuff, so alien, that it made the color bugs look almost normal by comparison. It was like a pool of vomit left by a dog suffering from some new and dangerous strain of rabies. A trail of this stuff led away from the puddle, first in drying clots and splashes, then in smaller drips like spilled paint. Of course, Ralph thought. That's why we had to come here. The little bastard can't stay away from the place. It's like cocaine to a dope addict. He could imagine Atropos standing right here where he, Ralph, was standing now, looking, grinning,
then stepping forward and putting his hands on the doors, caressing them, creating those filthy, filmy marks. Could imagine Atropos drawing strength and energy from the very blackness which was robbing Ralph of his own vitality. He has other places to go, and other things to do, of course. Every day is undoubtedly a busy day when you're a supernatural psycho like him. But it must be hard for him to stay away from this place for long, no matter how busy he is. And how does it make him feel? Like a tight fuck on a summer afternoon, that's how. Lois tugged his sleeve from behind and he turned to her. She was still smiling, but the feverish intensity in her eyes made the expression on her lips look suspiciously like a scream. Behind her, Connie Chung and Rosenberg were strolling back toward the building. "You've got to get me out of here," Lois whispered. "I can't stand it anymore. I feel like I'm losing my mind." "Okay, no problem." "I can't hear you, Ralph, and I think I can see the sun shining through you." "Jesus, I'm sure I can." "Oh, wait." He concentrated and felt the world slide slightly around him. The colors faded. Lois's aura seemed to disappear back inside her skin. "Better?" "Well, solider, anyway." He smiled briefly. "Good, come on." He took her by the elbow and began guiding her back toward where Joe Weiser had dropped them off. It was the same direction in which the bloody splashes led. "Did you find what you were looking for?" "Yes." She brightened at once. "That's great. I saw you go up, you know. It was very odd. Like watching you turn into a sepia-toned photograph. And then, thinking I could see the sun shining through you. That was very peculiar." She looked at him severely. "Bad, huh?" "No, not bad exactly, just peculiar. Those bugs now, they were bad. Ugh." "I know what you mean. But I think they're all back there." "Maybe, but we're still a long way from being out of the woods, aren't we?" "Yeah, a long way from Eden," Carol would have said. "Just stick with me, Ralph Roberts, and don't get lost." "Ralph Roberts? Never heard of him. Norton's the name." And that, he was happy to see, made her laugh. They walked slowly across the asphalt parking lot with its gridwork of spray-painted yellow lines. Tonight, Ralph knew, most of these spaces would be filled. Come, look, listen, be seen. And most important, show your city and a whole watching country beyond it that you cannot be intimidated by the Charlie Pickerings of the world. Even the minority kept away by fear would be replaced by the morbidly curious. As they approached the racetrack, they also approached the edge of the death bag. It was thicker here, and Ralph could see slow, swirling movement, as if the death bag were made up of tiny specks of charred matter. It looked a bit like the air over an open incinerator, shimmering with heat and fragments of burnt paper. And he could hear two sounds, one overlaying the other. The top one was a silvery sighing. The wind might make a sound like that, Ralph thought, if it learned how to weep. It was a creepy sound, but the one beneath it was actively unpleasant. A slobbery chewing noise, as if a gigantic toothless mouth were ingesting large amounts of soft food somewhere close by. Lois stopped as they approached the death bag's dark, particle-flecked skin and turned frightened, apologetic eyes up to Ralph. When she spoke, it was in a little girl's voice. "I don't think I can go through that." She paused, struggled, and at last brought out the rest. "It's alive, you know. The whole thing, it sees them." Lois jerked a thumb back over her shoulder to indicate both the people in the parking lot and the news crews closer into the building. "And that's bad, but it also sees us, and that's worse, because it knows that we see it. It doesn't like being seen. Felt, maybe, but not seen." Now the lower-pitched sound, the slobbery eating sound, seemed almost to be articulating words. And the longer Ralph listened, the more sure he became that that was actually the case.
"Go out. Fuck off. Beat it."
"Ralph," Lois whispered, "did you hear it?
Ain't you? Kill you. Ain't you?
He nodded and took her by the elbow again. Come on, Lois. Come? Where?
Down, all the way.
For a moment she only looked at him, not understanding. Then the light dawned and she nodded. Ralph felt the blink happen inside him, a little stronger than the eyelash flutter of a few moments ago. And suddenly the day around him cleared. The swirling, smoggy barrier ahead of them melted away and was gone. Nevertheless, they closed their eyes and held their breath as they approached the place where they knew the edge of the death bag lay. Ralph felt Lois's hand tighten on his as she hurried through the invisible barrier, and as he passed through himself, a dark node of tangled memories. The slow death of his wife, the loss of her favorite dog as a child, the sight of Bill McGovern leaning over with one hand pressed against his chest, seemed to first lightly surround his mind and then clamp down on it like a cruel hand. His ears filled with that silvery sobbing sound, so constant and so chillingly vacuous, the weeping voice of a congenital idiot. Then they were through. As soon as they had passed beneath the wooden arch on the far side of the parking lot, "We're off to the races at Bassey Park," was printed along its curve. Ralph drew Lois over to a bench and made her sit down, although she insisted vehemently that she was just fine. "Good, but I need a second or two to get myself back together." She brushed a lock of hair off his temple and planted a gentle kiss in the hollow beneath. "Take all the time you need, dear heart." That turned out to be about 5 minutes. When he felt reasonably confident that he could stand up without coming unlocked at the knees, Ralph took her hand again, and they stood up together. "Did you find it, Ralph? Did you find his trail?" He nodded. "In order to see it, we have to go up about 2 jumps. I tried going up just enough to see the auras at first, because that doesn't seem to speed everything up, but it didn't work. It has to be a little more than that." "All right. But we have to be careful, because when we can see, we can be seen. Yes. We can't lose track of the time, either." "Absolutely not." "Are you ready?" "Almost. I think I need another kiss first. Just a little one will do." Smiling, he gave it to her. "Now I'm ready." "Okay, here we go." Blink. The reddish splotches of spoor led them across the packed dirt area where the midway stood during county fair week, then to the racetrack where the pacers ran from May to September. Lois stood at the chest-high slat fence for a moment, glanced around to make sure the grandstand was empty, and then boosted herself up. She moved with the sweet litheness of a young girl at first, but once she had swung a leg over the top and straddled the fence, she paused. On her face was an expression of mingled surprise and dismay. "Lois, are you all right?" "Yes, fine. It's my darned old underwear. I guess I've lost weight because it just won't stay where it belongs. For gosh sakes!" Ralph realized he could see not just the frilly hem of Lois's slip, but 3 or 4 inches of pink nylon. He stifled a grin as she sat astride the broad plank top of the fence, yanking at the fabric. He thought of telling her she looked cuter than kitten breeches, and decided that might not be such a good idea. "Turn your back while I get this damn slip fixed, Ralph, and wipe the smirk off your face while you're at it." He turned his back on her and looked at the Civic Center. If there had been a smirk on his face, he thought it more likely that she had seen one in his aura. The sight of that dark, slowly swirling death bag took care of it in a hurry. "Lois, you might be happier if you just took it off." "Pardon me all to heck and back, Ralph Roberts, but I wasn't raised to take off my underwear and leave it lying around on racetracks. And if you ever knew a girl who did do things like that, I hope it was before you met Carolyn. I only wish I had a..." Vague image of a gleaming steel safety pin in Ralph's head. "I don't suppose you have one, do you, Ralph?" He shook his head and sent back an image of his own, sand running through an hourglass. All right, I get the message. I think I've fixed it so it'll hold together at least a little longer. You can turn around now." He did.
She was letting herself down the other side of the board fence, and doing it with easy confidence. But her aura had paled considerably, and Ralph could see dark circles under her eyes again. The revolt of the Foundation garments had been quelled, however, at least for the time being. Ralph boosted himself up, swung a leg over the fence, and dropped down on the other side. He liked the way doing it felt. It seemed to wake old, long memories in his bones. "We're going to need to power up again before long, Lois." Lois, nodding wearily.
"I know. Come on, let's go."
They followed the trail across the racetrack, climbed another board fence on the other side, then descended a brushy, overgrown slope to Nybalt Street. Ralph saw Lois grimly holding her slip up through the skirt of her dress as they struggled down the hill. Thought again about asking if she wouldn't be happier just ditching the damn thing, and decided again to mind his own business. If it became enough of a problem to her, she would do it without any further advice on the subject from him. Ralph's greatest worry, that Atropos's trail would simply peter out on them, initially proved groundless. The dim pink blotches led directly down the crumbling, patched surface of Nybalt Street, between paintless tenements that should have been demolished years ago. Tattered laundry flapped on sagging lines. Dirty children with snotty noses watched them pass from dusty front yards. A beautiful, tow-headed boy of about 3 gave Ralph and Lois a deeply suspicious look from his front step, then grabbed his crotch with one hand and used the other to flash them the bird. Nybalt Street dead-ended at the old train yards, and here Ralph and Lois momentarily lost the track. They stood by one of the sawhorses blocking off an ancient rectangular cellar hole, all that remained of the old passenger depot, and looked around at a big semicircle of waste ground. Rusty red siding tracks glowered from deep within tangles of sunflowers and thorny weeds. Shards from 100 broken bottles twinkled in the afternoon sun. Spray-painted in hot pink letters across the splintery side of the old diesel shed were the words, "Susie sucked my big fat one." This sentimental declaration stood within a border of dancing swastikas. "Ralph, where the hell did it go?"
"Down there, Ralph, see?"
She was pointing along what had been the main line until 1963, the only line until 1983, and was now just another pair of rusty, overgrown steel tracks on the way to nowhere. Even most of the ties were gone, burned as evening campfires, either by local winos or by vags passing through on the way to the potato fields of Aroostook County, or the apple orchards and fishing smacks of the Maritimes. On one of the few remaining cross ties, Ralph saw splashes of pink spoor. They looked fresher than the ones they had followed down Nybalt Street. He stared along the half-hidden course of the tracks, trying to recall. If memory served, this line skirted the municipal golf course on its way back to... well, on its way back to the west side. Ralph thought this must be the same set of defunct tracks which ran along the edge of the airport and past the picnic area where Faye Chapin might even now be brooding over the seedings in the upcoming Runway 3 Classic. "It's all been one big loop," he thought. "It's taken us damn near 3 days, but I think in the end we're going to be right back where we started. Not Eden, but Harris Avenue."
"Say, you guys, how you doing?"
It was a voice Ralph almost thought he recognized, and that feeling was reinforced by his first look at the man it came from. He was standing behind them at the point where the Nybalt Street sidewalk finally gave up the ghost. He looked 50 or so, but Ralph guessed he might actually be 5 or even 10 years younger than that. He was wearing a sweatshirt and old ragged jeans. The aura surrounding him was as green as a glass of St. Patrick's Day beer. That was finally what turned the trick for Ralph. It was the wino who had approached him and Bill on the day he had found Bill in Strawford Park, bawling over his old pal Bob Paulhurst, who, as it had turned out, had outlived him. Life was funnier than Groucho Marx sometimes. A queer sense of fatalism was creeping over Ralph, and with it an intuitive understanding of the forces which now surrounded them. It was one he could have done without. It hardly mattered if those forces were beneficent or malign, random or purpose. They were gigantic. That was what mattered. And they made the things Clotho and Lachesis had said about choice and free will seem like a joke. He felt as if he and Lois were roped to the spokes of a gigantic wheel, a wheel which kept rolling them back to where they had come from, even as it took them deeper and deeper into this horrible tunnel.
"You got a bit of the old spare change, mister?"
Ralph slid down a little so the wino would be sure to hear him when he talked. "I'll bet your uncle called you from Dexter," Ralph said. "Told you you could have your old job back at the mill, but only if you got there today. Is that about right?" The wino blinked at him in cautious surprise.
"Well, yeah, something like that."
He felt for the story, one he probably believed in more fully than anyone he told it to these days, and found its tattered thread again.
"That's a good job, you know. And I could have it back. There's a Bangor and Aroostook bus at 2 o'clock, but the fare's 5.50, and so far I only got 2 and a quarter.
76 cents is what you've got," Lois said. 2 quarters, 2 dimes, 1 nickel, and a penny. But considering how much you drink, your aura looks extremely healthy. I'll say that much for you. You must have the constitution of an ox." The wino gave her a puzzled look, then took a step backward and wiped his nose with the palm of one hand. "Don't worry," Ralph reassured him. "My wife sees auras everywhere. She's a very spiritual person."
"Is that so now?"
"Uh-huh. She's also very generous, and I think she'll do quite a bit better by you than a little spare change. Won't you, Alice?" "He'll just drink it up," she said. "There's no job in Dexter." "No, probably not," Ralph said, fixing her with his eyes. "But his aura does look extremely healthy. Extremely."
"You kind of got your own spiritual side, I guess," the wino said.
His eyes were still shifting cautiously back and forth between Ralph and Lois, but there was a guarded flicker of hope in them. "You know, that's true," Ralph said, "and just lately it's really come to the fore." He pursed his lips as if an interesting thought had just occurred to him, and inhaled. A bright green ray shot out of the panhandler's aura, crossed the 10 feet separating him from Ralph and Lois, and entered Ralph's mouth. The taste was clear and at once identifiable. Boone's Farm apple wine. It was rough and low down, but sort of pleasant just the same. It had a working man's sparkle to it. With the taste came that sense of returning strength, which was good, and a sharp-edged clarity of thought that was even better. Lois, meanwhile, was holding out a $20 bill. The wino didn't immediately see it, however. He was scowling up into the sky. At that instant, another bright green ray quilled out of his aura. It shot across the weedy clearing beside the cellar hole like a brilliant flashlight beam and into Lois's mouth and nose. The bill in her hand shook briefly. "Oh, God, that's so good.
Goddamn jet jockeys from Charleston Air Force Base," the wino cried disapprovingly. "He exposes a boom or sound barrier till they get out over the ocean. I damn near wet my..."
His eye fell on the bill between Lois's fingers, and his scowl deepened.
"Say, what kind of joke you think you're pulling here? I ain't stupid, you know. Maybe I like a drink every now and then, but that don't make me stupid."
"Give it time," Ralph thought. "It will." "No one thinks you're stupid," Lois said, "and it's no joke. Take the money, sir." The bum tried to hold on to his suspicious glower, but after another close look at Lois and a quick side glance at Ralph, it was overwhelmed by a large and winning smile. He stepped toward Lois, putting out his hand to take the money, which he had earned without even knowing it. Lois raised her hand just before he could close his fingers on the bill. "Just mind you get something to eat as well as something to drink, and you might ask yourself if you're happy with the way you're living."
"You're absolutely right," the wino cried enthusiastically. His eyes never left the bill between Lois's fingers. "Absolutely, ma'am. They got a program other side of the river. Detox and rehab, you know? I'm thinking about it. I really am. I think about it every damn day.
But his eyes were still tacked to the 20, and he was almost drooling. Lois gave Ralph a brief, doubtful look, then shrugged and let the bill pass from her fingers to his.
Thanks. Thanks, lady. His eyes shifted to Ralph. This lady a real princess. I just hope you know that.
Ralph favored Lois with a fond glance.
As a matter of fact, I do, he said.